Womp womp. Womp womp at the start. This episode was recorded a little hot, so if you hear a little crackling here and there, it's not you, it's the audio. Sorry about that. But enjoy the episode. Thanks. Bye. Womp womp. It's new phone time.
It's new phone time?
It's new phone time. Look at this.
Whoa, you got a new phone? I also got a new phone.
I got the Google Pixel XL Pro.
How is it?
It's fantastic. It doesn't have... I had the 6 before, and the 6, every model of the 6 had beveled edges. It was a nightmare. You had to do it. And I was like, well, I guess I'm doing beveled edges for a few years now, but I don't have them anymore. Now it's just sleek and rose gold and a beautiful.
It is beautiful. You don't have it in a case, which is frightening me.
I don't have a case right now because, like, well, first off, the case is... Like, it's pretty much brand new, so there's not a whole lot of cases out there right now. It's just, like, the Google one, and I'm like, I'll have to get an OtterBox later or something. Secondly, the only screen protector they offer is the scammy, like, liquid.
Oh, sure,
which is
right,
nothing.
Yeah.
It's like the only screen I've ever broken was with one of those liquid protectors, quote unquote. I'm air quoting for the podcast, which is, again, nothing. That's not a thing. Why is that? That doesn't protect you. Liquid protector doesn't protect your, like, spit from getting on the phone either or anything.
I mean, it looks super sharp.
It's so slick. I'm enjoying it, and I did everything. Yes. And I got the tech. I brought that up. Well, what did you get first?
I got an iPhone 15.
Ick.
I finally made the jump to iOS. The problem is, like, so much other stuff in my life is, like, I have a MacBook, I have my iPad, like, just getting everything in the ecosystem and making file sharing and stuff easy was finally time to make the jump.
It's never easy. It's so deceptively not easy. The only thing that's easy is that Mac comes with terminal.
But look at this. Look at this cool green color.
I got you beat with the rose gold.
The rose gold is the highlights kind of around, like, where the camera is, with, yeah, like, the two-tone thing there. That is super sick.
Right. And, you know, it's great about Android. I can customize my icons and make them rosy as well. See how cool that is?
That is pretty cool.
And you can, like, move them around and stuff, which they just added for iOS, I heard. They just added the ability. I'm sorry. I don't have any hot takes on Apple. You know that it's just the way I feel is the way that everyone else who doesn't like Apple feels, which is that, like, man, they're just, like, behind the curve. And then everyone who is adopting Apple technology thinks they're super ahead of the curve.
I have complicated feelings about Apple, but...
Yes, the interconnectivity is straightforward. I'll give it that.
MacBooks have terminal, super easy access.
MacBooks do have terminal. It's way better than Windows PowerShell.
Or a freaking Chromebook or whatever.
Thankfully, I work in PyCharm, which also has terminal on it.
Although I am pissed. The new, I mean, I guess probably for, like, technological reasons, but, like, the new M1 MacBooks, which I have from, like, 2021 or whatever, they don't support dual booting into Windows anymore, which I used to always have a partition on Windows installed. Yeah, that's how I... That's how I played Team Fortress 2 at 16 frames a second in college.
Holy cow, what a story. Speaking of story, the reason I brought this phone up was that the color of this phone up was that the sales tech came out, and he was, like, really sad looking, because I was like, it's time for me to trade this in and get the Pixel 9. He's like, sure. He's like, super sad about it. He's like, man, I'm sorry, I only got this rose gold. And I was like, what are you talking about?
It's perfect.
that's the perfect. I didn't even know that was an option. like you're in the Boys Town store.
it looks like a high-end accessory, right? Like,
I can't believe the pink one wasn't sold out to begin with.
Actually, yes. Also, I'm also surprised.
It's great. It's fantastic. And speaking of, I'm done talking about phones now, and I would like to talk about video games. Let's do that.
Let's do it.
We continue Storm Bones by figuring out what's wrong in the Department of Death and finding our Herodrum friend passed out in horseshit.
Storm of Buzz, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Hello, one, and hello, all. Welcome back to Storm Bones. This is the spooky, scary Halloween month special of Storm Buzz, a video game podcast where we talk about the theme of video games, and this month's theme is bones. Oh, scary. All our games this month have bones in them. Last week, we talked about Super Castlevania 4. And today we are going to talk about Tim Schafer's point-and-click adventure, Grim Fandango.
What a game.
It is a video game. And of course, stick around for our second part of Diablo 4. Ooh, Alexander. Oh, speaking of names, fuck, I'm so bad at this. It's been 82 episodes. You'd think I'd get this right. I am your bone of light. Jerome.
No, go with that. Francis. Stick with that one.
I am. Stop interrupting me. I'm joined by my co-bone of light, Alexander Hambra.
Can I get that in like a business card?
You sure can.
Introduce ourselves at parties that way?
Not by me, though. I don't have the funds for it.
All right, this voice is done for now. Alexander, could you tell the buds about Grim Fandango?
Certainly I can. Okay, so we have previously talked about LucasArts, the studio responsible for a lot of formative adventure games. And previously we had discussed LucasArts largely under sort of the leadership of Ron Gilbert, who had worked on stuff like Day of the Tentacle and then the Monkey Island games and then left to found Humongous Entertainment.
I know we talked about Humongous Entertainment. We did not do an episode on Return to Monkey Island. I think that was just one of my side quests.
Right? Yeah, it was one of your segments at one point.
Yeah, fuck. Yeah, that game was great, but Tim Schafer was not on it, notably.
Yes. LucasArts and sort of like Ron Gilbert's sort of like, you know, period there have come up on this podcast before. We had not yet talked about Tim Schafer's period at LucasArts. He was sort of the other big director to come out of that studio more towards the back half of the 90s with three games, Full Throttle, then Grim Fandango, and then another Monkey Island game before LucasArts all kind of went kablooey, and then he went off to make Double Fine, which made Psychonauts, and then a bunch of other stuff that was kind of a middling reception, and then Psychonauts 2, which kicks ass.
Don't forget Brutal Legend.
Brutal Legend. Also,
remember that
also
confusing
a Tim Schafer game.
Holy shit. Definitely a Tim Schafer game. Go on.
Grim Fandango, a game that I have long heard described as a classic, but also was, it came out in like 1998 and was pretty unplayable for a while. There was a period of about 10 years, I want to say up through like maybe even like the mid 2010s, where it was really difficult to get it running on modern hardware. Something about like modern video acceleration made the way the rendering worked really wonky. I tried to get played a couple times in college and just had really difficulty getting it to work on my machine. So it's one of those things that like when they announced the remastered version, a lot of people were like, hey, great, people can actually play this game and just click and open it and not have to worry about messing with a bunch of any files or whatever they had to do before.
Yeah, the remaster does work as expected. I didn't have any issues with its performance or anything like that. So this game is, as I mentioned, a point-and-click adventure around, as you mentioned, 1998. So slightly before, but of course is on PC, but still contemporaneous with the early PS1 era. So you can expect graphics similar to that when you're looking at this game, and it does have some pretty spectacular pre-rendered backgrounds with the models moving on top of them, similar to our good friend Final Fantasy VIII, but at a little bit of a higher level because it was a PC game, so they had more just raw hardware to work with at the time, and the art direction and the cutscenes are pretty cool for again the time period. I was a big fan of the aesthetic of this game, and the aesthetic of this game is largely inspired by Day of the Dead. Grim Fandango covers the story of Manny Calavera, who is Calavera is Spanish for skull, who is a salesman for the Department of Death, who gets keeps getting these raw deals from the higher ups.
He's like a travel agent, right? His job is when you arrive in the underworld, he's the one who like takes your money and helps you like book like a boat or a train or a car or whatever to reach like your soul's rest.
Yes, and it's a pretty It's a really good premise. I think that the casting in particular is really excellent. The characters, in spite of all being skeletons and dead, that's thus the bone theme. It's kind of why we picked it. Do feel very much alive and
they're
interactive.
Super expressive.
And expressive. Particularly Glottis, who is not a skeleton, but that Glottis is a demon character who helps Manny get around the underworld with his jury-rigged hot rod, is a character that I really liked and felt an affinity for. I felt that I would be a great casting choice for it.
You could particularly do Glottis.
Yeah, with like my Efreet voice or whatever, something similar to that. Like, he sounds similar, right?
Yeah, exactly. Very similar. Manny, get in the car.
Okay. Yeah, Manny's Glottis is a good time. And I think the aesthetic of the game and the theme of it, celebrating the Day of the Dead, the game takes place on the Day of the Dead over the course of, you know, different years,
is four subsequent
really
years.
Clever, very clever. And this game is I think, you know, just setting wise extremely clever,
right? Because the other half of it, right, is like it's very inspired by like Day of the Dead, very inspired by a lot of Aztec mythology. Yeah, also,
and I do want to mention that the voice actors, while they sound Latin American, is because they are, which is a big deal.
Yes.
For of course, for 1998, you know, Latin American voices going to appropriately educated and experienced actors that do a really good job adding a lot of authenticity to the experience. Mm-hmm. And the story and the language and the behavior.
And I was like, half of it is like Aztec mythology inspired Day of the Dead. The other half of it is 50s noir. Mm-hmm. Like it's a lot of Art Deco. It's a lot of things happening in nightclubs. It's a lot of things.
It's a lot of Casablanca.
It's a lot of Casablanca.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I think actually very good at it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and a lot of that is down, well, so first off, I think Tim Schafer is just a really, really good writer. I think this game reinforces that. I think he's one of the best writers working in video games. I think that he really is good at stuff like having characters and themes be connected in ways that then evolve over the course of the story. Like, Psychonauts 2, I think, is a fantastically written game, and I think that this game has a lot of similar sort of good writing going on. And part of that is, I'm gonna rant a little bit here. I am a big noir, hard-boiled, all that stuff guy. I've read a lot of stories and novels. I've watched a lot of movies. It is a genre I am pretty familiar with. A lot of times when modern people try to do stuff in the noir space, it comes off, and I say this with all love, with real big theater kid energy. Like,
I see what you're saying. It's
a dame walked into my office. I chomped down on a cigar. I knew she was trouble the moment I set eyes on her. Right? Like, a lot of sort of like real high pastiche type stuff.
It's just it's also rote. It's not necessarily telling a new story with a noir aesthetic. It is saying a lot of the same things that a previous noir or Dick Tracy or something like that, mm-hmm, story would have happened. There's nothing new to it. Whereas, of course, a story like Grim Fandango, there is no story retelling. There is no Day of the Dead Aztec noir piece of fiction that exists anywhere else.
Well, and Manny is a really good noir protagonist. Like, the thing that this game gets that I see get missed a lot is, like, a lot of people lean into sort of like the noir protagonist as this gritty, grizzled, sort of like, you know, morally ambiguous type figure. But a lot of the best noir protagonists, the actual thing about them is that they're actually quite vulnerable and they're actually quite romantic at heart. And what is so painful about existing in the world is that the world is so harsh and chaotic and doesn't seem to operate on anything. And I think that's Manny to a T. Hmm. I think that, like, Manny is a bit of a grifter. He's like, he's a little bit of, like, you know, a little bit of a sleazeball sometimes. He's often on the back foot, but he's always looking for an angle. But he's good with people, and he seems like really sort of like, he's good with people. and he's good at navigating the world, but he doesn't seem to like it. And the thing about this woman that he's kind of following, because he's trying to track down this woman across like this 4-year journey because she got screwed over by corruption higher up in the Department of Death. The thing about it is that like they do the thing where it's like, oh, it's love at first sight, and he sees her and he, you know, is obsessed with her. But like, I was worried when that happened that we were going to get a whole lot of sort of like almost like back and forth between the two of them. But instead, she's missing for most of the story. And really what it is it's him chasing after her because she seems to represent like one thing that is good in a world that does not seem to have a whole lot of good in it. And it bothers him that like that she might not be getting her due. And like, and he is like something of an idealist at heart, which is why he goes on this insane 4-year journey. And that feels really complicated in a way that just doing like another parody of Sam Spade does not.
Yeah. I think that's a really thoughtful and insightful description of what's happening and a description of the very likable, yes, as you said, sleazeball and kind of a scumbag protagonist, Manny Calavera. But like noir protagonists aren't virtuous and they're not always great. Like he talks to women, he talks to Ava kind of shittily, but like he's always trying to skip out on work and sleep around and whatever. But like, yeah, he's as I said, the characters are just so. They're so likable and charming. It's, for me, a shame this game sucks ass to play.
Not into it?
This game, the puzzles in this game are atrocious. Come on, they're atrocious. First off, Manny takes forever to move, even with like the sprint, the double-click sprint or whatever. It takes forever getting from screen to screen. It's the perspectives in the pre-rendered backgrounds are awkward half the time, and then Manny's just running back and forth between screens. And it's not good by 1998 point-and-click adventure standards. Interacting with the inventory for me is really tedious. Like the inventory items are just stored in a completely
linear array.
Like linear array that is indeterminate. I don't know like what the order of my items is at any given time. And then the puzzles themselves are there. It's like an entire game of the portrait puzzles from Final Fantasy. And I'm just like, God, these are so esoteric and weird. And they take so like if you're not following a walkthrough, I feel like they take so long that the punchlines are lost in time. Like, what do you mean I have to go back and get 2 extra dead balloons again and then fill them up with the stupid things and go back in because I didn't notch the door and then have to start everything over again? And the puzzles just keep being like that. They keep being this like one at a time long Rube Goldberg of series of events that you have to perfect. That I found was annoying. And I think for me, while the characters are charming, a lot of Schaefer's comedy doesn't do it for me. It's very setup heavy and strong on the premise, but more often than not kind of like fails to deliver in the way of subversion. Most of the time there was a joke around in Act 2 that was really good where it was like, where the skipper that rescues you from the fog is like talking about a girl that absconded with his boat, and Manny's like, do you miss her? And he's like, the SS Landry, yes, I miss her all the time. Like that's subversion, that's funny. But my biggest laugh came from the trip to the land of the living, where the living are just like all these collages of people.
Right,
like
yes.
That was, but it was like, it was a cute idea, and there's so many cute, lovely, clever ideas, and I can give you a lot of other. I mean, I don't really want to. I don't want to list all the times I didn't really laugh or was like, "Oh, okay."
This could just
kind
be
disappointing.
It could just be a taste thing. I thought this game
possibly
was funny as hell.
I'm not. I would extend that, I think, to Psychonauts as well. I watched a streamer, Romola, one of my favorite streamers ever. Saw like she played this game too, and that was just like a weird platformer that didn't the platforming in it, it looked like a struggle for the most part. And I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt because she's like used to be a fighting game streamer and she's like super good on precision and used most of the time controls and stuff. Though she did struggle. No, she struggled in Space Channel 5, but that was the emulator's fault. called.
Okay, I will take Psychonauts 2 off our list.
Yeah, no, I'm not a... And I was like, why am I not liking this? I like Monkey Island. I like that stuff. But then I was looked up who the credits were. And I was like, oh, Schaefer is just like one third of Monkey Island. Yeah. And he was probably tempered in a way, those old ones. And the latest one, Return to Monkey Island, was my favorite in the franchise. And he's nowhere to be seen. And I was like, oh, okay.
The
way of subversion doesn't do anything, and just the pacing is weird. The time skips are cool to keep the story on the Day of the Dead, but they come at weird times. Like there's a year passed now today. I get a mop and now it's the year passed, and there's all this like stuff that's happened. Like, oh, that's okay, I guess he's in charge of this place. And like,
see, and that's right. That's something that worked for me. Like, for me, I liked being like, oh, he's a janitor, he's mopping floors at the end of the 1 year, and then we cut to a year later and he's running a nightclub, and it's like a whole implied story in there about how he probably, like, you know, made that happen. And I really liked in that second act, sort of like as you go around the town, you have all of these really like casual and familiar conversations with everyone else, where like it becomes very clear that like Manny has established relationships with everyone.
Yeah, the in media res sort of the gag on the latest Dimension 20 junior year where they did an in media res thing mostly didn't work for me either. So it's just a taste thing. I'm trying to just think of other examples. Like, yeah, I guess that's kind of that's the formula that it's following, but. Okay, for me, I felt a little left out in that case. So I was like, well, since I'm not enjoying playing this because the puzzles are dated and weird and in my opinion not enjoyable, I may as well watch it. And then I tried watching it, and like the person who was like doing the no commentary playthrough was also struggling remembering the fucking puzzles, and it was like the most validating thing ever. I was like, I knew these were stupid.
I really do, because I have not played the early Monkey Island games. Are the inventory puzzles in those more straightforward than
it's
these?
Been a long time. I didn't have that much issue, but I think also maybe they're easier. I just feel like they're easier puzzles. Like Return to Monkey Island was like super easy, but it doesn't matter because if you solve a puzzle fast, because then you get to the punchline of the joke that the puzzle's setting up, right? Everything, all of the obfuscation and the weird backtracking, there's so much backtracking in this game. There's so much backtracking. It gets in the way of telling the joke. And I'm like not laughing anymore because I'm frustrated that I have to go back to the damn sad clown for my fourth dead worm balloon. You know what I mean? Like,
Sure.
So it's hard to not separate those things as a player of video games. If I want to play the video game, and like it should add to it and not take away from it. God, and then you have to go back, like going back up and down and the figuring out the birds for the resistance movement, whom I love the resistance movement. I love the idea of all that. And then
did you get to the bit where you give the communist manifesto to the dock workers?
I don't think so.
One of the ways you get tools is like you got these dock workers.
That was in Act 2, but
who are like unhappy with like their conditions. They're bees, and so you give them like a communist manifesto, and they become like immediately radicalized. And then versions of the humor that works for me, like a cop rolls up on the bee and is like, "Huh, buddy? You know, I think most bees are yellow and red or yellow and black, but you look all red to me." And I was like, "Ha ha ha."
I think I pulled a U as well, where I was like, so I was kind of like. I was at the start exhausting the dialogue options, but the dialogue options felt like things I just didn't want to hear after a while. I was like, I don't want to hear Manny say that to Ava or to anyone. I don't want to hear these things. So maybe I just wasn't getting as much out of it. Maybe I was pulling a U where I just wasn't doing the optional dialogue and missing out on a lot of really important context.
I mean, I'm getting an impression here that you and I might be different people and our tastes might not be identical.
Yeah, I think that's the case, which is, yeah, so I'm disappointed because I tend to really like these sorts of things and recommend them to people. And I was really excited for this. I love the aesthetic of this game. Love it. It is still a spooky season. I also like the duality of, you know, having the Day of the Dead celebration happening around me. I'm not Latino. I said Latina, whatever. I am not Latin American, so I don't celebrate Day of the Dead, but I really, really like seeing it around. I think the aesthetic of it is really pretty, and the message behind it is so beautiful that I was really excited to see this game and see how I think it does the subject matter and the theming justice. I don't think there's anything wrong with it apart from its gameplay.
The puzzles.
Apart from the number one thing I want out of a game, which is for it to play good.
Sure. Bit of an issue.
Yeah. I don't think that's that hot of a take either. I feel like I can see why this game's not like super duper legendary. Probably because of that.
I really do wonder about contemporary sort of like expectation, like, or like, to what extent are the puzzles in this game actually badly designed, or like not actually badly designed, but like, to what extent are they badly designed versus to what extent is it just like this genre is so out of practice for basically everyone that like getting your brain in a mode where you get into this puzzle solving mode.
No, it's the backtracking, and it's the repetitiveness, the backtracking, and the time spent having to try and fail these puzzles is way too much, and also interfacing with the inventory to then try and fail like just adds more to it, where you're like having to loop through all your things to find. I keep harping on this one because it was like the one that actually made me the most frustrated first, and then it was hard to not think about like compare everything like, God, it's another damn dead worm balloon puzzle. But like,
okay, but you can ask them to make like a balloon of Robert Frost, and you make
like
you
yeah
one.
But Monkey Island, I feel like, or like Dr. fucking Quandary had better inventory management. Sure. You know.
Did you know that Manny Calavera has an entry on Sexopedia, the sexy Wikipedia?
Now, voice acting is really good.
Do you want to know what Manny's archetypes are in Sexopedia?
Nope.
His categories are capitalist, DILF, distinctive voice, yeah, distinctive speech pattern, eldritch, long coat, non-human, quotable catchphrases, retro, skeleton, suit guy, urban legend aesthetic, well-dressed.
All of those are true. Understandable. Have a great day. And so that's, I think, unless you have anything else you want to say, I would like to put a cap on Grim Fandango. Check it out yourselves if that's something you're interested in. I maybe am being a picky puzzle bitch, that's how I feel. Alex really, really loved this game and was super excited to talk about it, and I'm glad I listened to him talk about it.
I found the characters in the story good enough that I think, and the style and music, that like I think it's worth checking out, and if you get stuck, maybe look at a guide or something.
Yeah, I went through the whole rigmarole of being like, I'm just gonna play this with a guide, and then I was like, why am I playing, why not just watch this stupid thing? Like, and then that's we're back to where we are. We are going to take our customary ad break. You know our old, what we used to call the market board, we will be right back after I go and repot all my plants.
All three of them?
You bet.
We're gonna read some ads.
Are you struggling with keeping the prime evils out of your mind and body? Are you or a loved one suffering from rapid convulsions, demonic possession, or an insatiable and inexplicable need to consume the same song over and over again? For instance, Magnetic by Eilidh?
Well, gosh, I think I'm affected by all those things.
Then please sign up immediately for Akarat University, where you or your loved one will be gently instilled by way of our several unique proprietary education techniques with the essence of our three core tenets.
Three core tenets, you say?
Three core tenets. Not
three core tenets?
Tenets. Yes.
Tenets?
Yes.
Oh, like the movie?
Yes, like the Christopher Nolan 7 out of 10 movie Tenet. Tenet number one. Are you taking notes?
I'm writing them down.
Put
right
those
here.
Down. These are expensive, and you cannot take notes legally
until
you sign up.
Oh, gosh, okay.
But you can listen. Number one, forgiveness is king. Say your podcast co-host went into your bathroom after a delicious dinner of Thai vegan steak curry that was very spicy and perhaps caused a blockage in your plumbing. It is best not to be mad at your podcast co-host over long, lest the Lord of Hatred manifest his nasty black ooze in your sweet, vulnerable arteries and consume you with hatred.
I'm worried. Did I do this?
Tenet number two. Do not be afraid to be in the moment. Say, for instance, your gracious podcast co-host presents you with an opportunity to react naturally to something that was said or presented in either a bit or during regular programming. It is best not to be afraid to respond within the first 5 or 6 seconds so that you keep the Lord of Terror's little grabby hands out of the folds of your amygdala. In addition, this will save your editor countless minor headaches when he later has to edit out the awkward silences.
Oh, jeez. Oh, gosh. I just freeze up sometimes. I can't help it.
Tenet number three. The final tenet. Preserve the peace, integrity, and sanctity of the space. Say, for instance, you're recording a podcast at your podcast co-host's house, and you think, maybe I should hydrate myself over this session with a loud metallic water bottle. Do be careful not to destroy the audio by loudly flipping open the water bottle and slurping down Mother Nature's clear elixir directly into the hypercardioid microphone that your gracious podcast co-host spent hundreds of dollars on while your co-host is talking. If you do not, you can be sure that in the night, the Lord of Destruction will crawl on your pasty white paper-thin skin in the middle of the full moon.
Okay, well, I don't think that one was me.
Well, it sounds like you have a lot of reflecting and self-reflecting and growth to do by way of adhering more closely to Akarat's three tenets of keeping the prime evils out.
Well, so wait, do I need to pay you now? Because you just
no,
told
you
them
apply.
To me.
No. This, remember, there are several unique proprietary education techniques.
Oh, that
will
that
gently
are not
instill the essence of the three core tenets into your being.
Right, I get it. Knowledge is only the first step.
Yes, and after 10 years of undergraduate training, you can be sure that you will leave Akarat University completely warded against the evils of the underworld for at least 5 months of blissful freedom, after which you will need to start the program over again.
Well, 10 years ain't that bad.
Tuition is 300 million gold.
Gold
bullion.
Gold what?
300 million gold coins in bullion.
300 million gold coins in bullion?
Yes, which honestly, in the grand scheme of things in the endgame, you'll be surprised to learn is not that much.
Boy, I feel like Martin Luther might have some problems with this.
Well, Martin Luther was a regular at Akarat University, I assure you. He had lots of hundreds of millions of gold. He was a total hypocrite.
Jeez, they don't teach you that bit in seminary.
No, but they do teach it to you at Akarat University. Sign up today. You can apply for governmental aid with FAFSA. They cover bullying as
well. Wait, Akarat University is accredited?
You bet. And because it's accredited, we do not have promo codes for Stormbuds listeners.
Can I get a minor in chemical engineering at the same time?
Perhaps. It is a heavy workload. We'll have to talk with your counselor about that. Akarat University. Save your soul for a meager price. What is 300 million gold for salvation?
I did like Robert Pattinson in Tenet.
All right. My plants are now watered with the blood of 20 heretics, which is great. They're satiated and we will live another day. So I'm glad I took care of that.
Man, Audrey 3 is getting bigger.
Right. That's the point. That's definitely the point. It's a good way to kind of cleanse the populace of the non-believers. And speaking of non-believers, we are going to continue talking about the main campaign of Diablo 4, which I'm realizing now, the more that I play this game, is a little bit of a disservice to the story of this game because so much of it is also interspersed throughout the side quests.
Oh,
as
really?
Well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things going on in like the later zone. I learned that like there's like a whole back. There's like a little bit of a backstory about like the opening cutscene too, and like everything is kind of connected in this way. So, it's totally worth doing the side quests. However, we are now recording this a couple days after the season started and completed, which means that like if you want to, you kind of have to start a new character if you want to do all those seasons. And the side, like a lot of the things do carry over between characters, like the main story campaign progress, but not the side quest carry campaign progress.
Wait, really?
Yeah. So like, I have to redo all the side quests that I was doing.
Oh my god!
Which is like super annoying to get completion credit, but it's like, well, that's where I'm at. But otherwise, yes, we are now recording this after the release of the expansion. We will talk about the expansion on the final episode. Not so much going to do a full story summary of it, because I'm guessing, I haven't really started it yet because I was saving it, but I'm going to guess that it's going to be a lot longer than any... most of the two acts that we're doing.
Pretty much guarantee I'm not going to finish the expansion of the story.
Yeah, plus we're recording two episodes at once next week. So it's going to be like, we're going to just not have full time, but
we're going to talk impressions.
I have plenty to talk about systems, gameplay, and from what I've learned so far in the campaign.
I am also very curious to get into that, because before we get into the story summary of Act 3 and 4 of Diablo 4,
yeah.
I will say, like, I am developing an active sort of antipathy towards like the gameplay in this. Just,
really?
It's just so easy. The story is too long to be this easy. Did you start playing
after the season started?
No, I have not. I did it X3 and 4 before the switch over.
Okay, I think they fixed some of the difficulty with this a little bit. At least when I started a new character, because I don't know if difficulties 3 and 4 are unlocked for you if you don't complete the story, but like I went and started a new character and then started on like difficulty 3 and I was getting my shit kicked in immediately. They maybe tuned up difficulty 2, but yes, it's like super, it was just deathly easy before
but
the
still
expansion,
so
but
long.
They changed it's yeah well man, I feel like this was actually the shortest segment by a...
Well, like, I'm saying, like, in general, like, when this thing is over, I'm probably going to have put, what, like, 12 to 15 hours into the main story?
Yeah, that's not bad.
Well, for something that's this easy, I guess, like, the comparison I keep thinking of is something like Monster Hunter, where, like, yes, yeah. The actual, like, difficulties in the end game, but also all the stuff that you're doing until that point.
Diablo
still
2
has...
was a lot harder, too, in this story. Diablo 3 was not, but Diablo 2 was very, it was actually really hard, and kind of like, oh my god, I mean, the amount of times I died to those first two act bosses. But let's get into, I agree,
we'll
when
see.
I played through this, I just ate it up. It was just, like, done. I was like, well, my notes are going to be super easy and like they're going to be done and I'm going to move on. I'm interested in revisiting the campaign, sort of the campaign with a new character now that they've made some changes to the difficulty and stuff. The difficulty they've also added difficulties too. But yeah, for the first run through of the campaign, it might be a little, it might still be a little easy, but like, I'm hoping, knock on wood, that with the changes they made it a little bit less of a stomp.
Well, and two questions here. So the expansion's out now, right?
Oh yeah.
And does it have new classes with it?
That's one.
It's one new class. Which class is it?
That's the Spiritborn.
Spiritborn. Like, do you know if it's possible to like play that class in the main campaign also?
Probably.
Or? Okay.
I mean,
cool.
I'm doing it.
I might check it
now,
out.
But we're going to talk about that in two episodes.
Sure. You're right. Okay. When we get there.
Enough of a preamble. Act 3, the Desert Act.
Oh boy, is it.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I talk about this being long, I'm mostly thinking about one part.
Spent a lot of time. Oh, look, more hidden footprints.
This is...
Look, more hidden footprints.
You say that, but there's a bit in here where we have to ask around town, and I was just like, oh, it's just an MMO.
This is just more hidden footprints. Oh, no, you don't know this. More hidden footprints is from Diablo 3.
Oh, wait, really?
Yes, I was like, oh, wait, you never played Diablo.
Oh, okay, okay.
But yes, we did have to look
you
for hidden footprints.
You invoked that in Final Fantasy XIV
all
the time.
Yeah, because there were hidden footprints all the time.
You're right. Okay, this full loop.
This is a full looping moment.
Anyway, we head to the southwest.
Well, we head to the west, right? Because we track down Lorith.
I guess to start, yeah. We find Lorith passed out in a stable.
Oh, it's southwest from Act 2.
I guess, yeah, for sure.
And We find Lorith, who is passed out in the middle in the day in a pile of horse shit. So that's cool.
It's like that one story with Jesus or Noah, one of them.
One of them. He confesses that he learns that the Pale Man was once, in fact, Haradrim. Oh, no. Who could have guessed that one of the Haradrim would have turned evil? Elias, Lorith's apprentice. Oh, so he's really depressed that his former protege has now... what's the word? Cavorting with the daughter of hatred. So that would suck. Now, I guess that would lead me to drink as well, if I knew I was indirectly responsible for that. I think maybe all the Haradrim should stop.
Because
this keeps happening with Haradrim in general.
Like, kind of a Jedi Order thing going on here, right?
Yeah, they do, pretty much. It's just like one kind of gets a little, either a little power hungry or a little egotistical and starts to take things into his own hands and whoops. Well, go figure. Yeah, no, I wanted to plant my flag in the sand now. The Haradrim suck, and they always have. They're these sort of self-righteous custodians of knowledge. And they kind of seal everything away, and they don't really...
They're not doing a great job. It's not a very good job.
So anyway, we have two things to do. We have to go to the canyon to track down a lead on Elias, and we have to go to the monastery because Lorith sent word and he hadn't heard back. Which did you do first?
I did the monastery.
I did the canyon.
Should we just like start talking simultaneously? Mm-hmm, I can describe the monastery. And you
no,
can
let's do the monastery. I think that makes more sense, actually, story-wise. I did the monastery. Like, I was like, oh, I wish I'd done the monastery first. So let's talk about it. We get to the monastery and everyone's dead, obviously.
Yep. It's a dungeon, which is cool. Nice to have more dungeons that are not just underground caves.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like the cathedral dungeons a lot. Or the very gothic arched, stone-arched cathedrals that like somehow just MC Escher off into infinity off the sides every time. It's so fun, but it's so weird.
It's funny because like the layout is just the layout does look just enough like sort of old blueprints of like medieval cathedrals and stuff with like the cloisters and the big halls with the pillars and stuff, but also just like you said, sort of like procedurally amalgamated out into this enormous complex.
So, like, the abbot of the monastery is like, oh, your apprentice arrived without you. That's never happened before, ever. But we're going to let him, and he looks kind of pale and weird, but we're going to let him in. Okay, so, by the way, we get a note with all this happening. It says, we're going to let him in to the monastery and wait for you to show up. And I was like, how does anything get done in this universe? How does any... like city begin to form when there's 10 good people and 70,000 bad ones outside?
Yeah, I mean, like, where did all the monsters come from?
The numbers don't
from the moon.
The math is not mathing. Oh god, that'd be weird. Imagine monsters coming from a moon. Anyway, Lorith or Elias surprisingly killed everyone and took some summoning rite knowledge scrolls that he needed, and the abbot, before we could talk him down, self-immolated in a pretty gruesome scene.
Yep.
And we just missed Elias. Oh, nuts.
Ah, man. He got away from us again for the first time.
Yeah, well, that's the monastery half, the canyon half. We learn about a sculptor named Genbar who got seduced by Lilith and Elias because he's weird and antisocial. And because like, don't you want people to respect you? How about you summon some demons to kill everyone so they'll respect you? And the artist is like, okay, why not?
Well, and like no one else liked his art, but Lilith and Elias said they found it beautiful, and so there were others who were like him, and he was like, yes, absolutely, someone recognizes my genius.
It's exactly like Pam's art show in The Office, and Michael liked the art.
Well, and then there's so we go to like the wreckage of his workshop.
Pam summons the devil. Join me, Jim.
It is so funny. So this guy, we work through his workshop, right? And we find him down in this basement cave, like doing a worship of like a heptagram or whatever. And we're like, he's like, who are you? And we're like, Elias sent for us. And he's like, bullshit. Elias doesn't need anything.
All right.
Immediately.
Honestly, he ate us up.
Yeah.
He really got life. Us there. Mm-hmm. So we got to beat him up. So he...
Oh, and he summons a big demon also.
He summons a big demon to help us.
Because it's important. The demon is from elsewhere.
Yes. The demon is from elsewhere. And Lorith says, all right, well, we got to figure out where this demon is from or where this demon has been. And maybe that'll give us a lead. So we drag that big old demon to a hut in town, in one of the towns whose names I can't remember. It's a nearby town. And
we cut open his belly.
Yeah, we cut open his belly. And there's a bunch of... limbs and stuff, but we find a medallion from the royal family of Gul'ran, which has since been overrun by cannibals and nonsense and whole, a bunch of nasty, nasty stuff.
And Lorath, like, he's all gung-ho to cut this demon open and get, like, the body parts inside.
Everyone else in the town is like, this is awful, stop.
Well, it's so interesting that they're like, this is blasphemous, or like, this is desecration of the corpses, right? The corpses in this demon belly deserve better than this. And it's like, do they? I guess. Like,
well, yeah, they're not. I mean, not everyone.
They got eat by a demon.
Everyone in this universe has really, really, really strong beliefs, and they don't always. This is why the Harajum are the way they are about not really bothering to educate the masses, because it's a lot of work, honestly. Like, these people are set in their beliefs and ways, and it's real hard to find anyone that's willing to listen to their research or anything like that, because I mean, they'll just be branded heretics and killed. Like, every single zone in this has its own version of the Salem witch hunts going on, which is just part of the charm, part of the real vibe. It's a little witchy vibe that we're going for.
Sanctuary feels like a bit of a misnomer. I don't know that this is actually a great
place
to live.
Yes, it's certainly, well, it's either sanctuary or actual hell or heaven. Ugh. Yeesh.
Yeah, imagine if this is what's waiting for us. We go to Gul'ran.
We go to Gul'ran and we run into, well, we find a little
the
overlook.
The city is fucked.
Well, we run a little, we meet up in overlook, and we meet up with a woman named Zelaya, who tells us about a woman who can help us get into the city, who's like being held hostage or being besieged by the cannibals, right? These cannibals were all imprisoned. And pretty much we learn more about what happens there later. We find Oyun out in the city after killing, you know, God knows how many cannibals. So many. Again, how does anything get done if everyone's eating each other? How are there so many people left? Yeah. Whatever. The numbers don't make sense. Everyone reincarnates or comes back from hell. It's just good, gory, gooey, peanut buttery fun. And sure, like, we break Oyun out. We're like, all right, we can leave, right? Surely we can just turn back the way we came. She's like, no, I know a better way out. That's through these tunnels that don't have monsters cleared out of them. So surely there's nothing in there. And we're like, all right.
It's like a Skyrim dungeon where, like, you get all the way to the end and then it's like, pull this lever and the exit's not, right there.
It's like, not like I don't two-shot everything anyway.
Also, Azulaya and Oyun seem to be girlfriends.
They seem to be
sweet.
Gay as fuck. Are they gay? That's the greatest sin of all.
That's true.
If you ask me, there's all this cannibalism and going on, but I'll take that over the gay. Oh, I threw up.
I do want to. Yeah, which lesser evil is the gay one? It's
definitely Andariel. Oh my God, is it Andariel? Oyun tells us about the secret passage, and we make our way through the caverns, and they ride off into the sunset together. There's also a not so fun side quest with them later, if you found it. But it's nice to see them go off and have their minor little gay moment. They had more gay screen time than the gay couple in Final Fantasy 16. I just realized.
Wow.
Oh my God.
That bad, huh?
Listen.
Because it's like 2 minutes in this game. Not even. It's like 45 seconds.
No, it's maybe it's comparable. I don't know. Maybe I was just telling a joke. Lorath deduces that they're going to summon a lesser evil, and it's either Duriel or Andariel. And my first thought was, why not both? And it would be best if neither of those happened. So, of course, I have the note. Of course, both of them, whatever. So, of course, one of them's going to happen, right? we learn more about shackles and whatever. We see more evidence that's Andariel. Woohoo! And Dariel's back!
The Maiden of Anguish.
She was the first boss, or she's the big boss of Act 1 of Diablo 2, and in it she goes, "Die, maggot!" when she approached her, and it's great. She's an icon, a legend, and a star. We're down
in the Tola of rock and rolla.
We find Elias's book chamber, and we just missed him. Dang it.
Dang it.
We keep just missing him. We also learned from his notes that Lilith is, in fact, trying to fight against hell. Woohoo! Great.
Yeah,
I was
like
right.
Big deal.
Seems like, hey, wow, cool.
Is that going to, like,
does that mean we're going to fight with her?
I'm
down to not have hell anymore.
I'm curious, like, doesn't hell have, like, infinite demons? Like, I do wonder infinite how you fight it.
Well, I'm sure you just control it. I don't know. And then you just, I don't know. There's a lot about this cosmology that we don't know and don't understand, and I think that's pretty cool.
I shouldn't play dumb. We learn what the actual plan is in the rest, of, like, the next act, basically.
We have to get into an ancient temple of the prime evils that is kind of underneath Gul'ran here. And we need to be blessed by one of them to open the temple. Surely we're just opening it for Elias, right? No, he's already in there. That's what I thought. I thought it's going to be one of those things, aha, you opened it for me. But it's like, no, obviously Elias is already blessed.
We would not get ahead of any antagonist in this game at any
That's
point.
That's like such a good point, and I wish you had been there to correct me when I wrote that note. But I wanted to share it anyway. But this is a bad idea, right? Like the wolf said.
Like the wolf said? I mean, yeah. To our three, which I did not know, the three primes, not a Diablo person. Apparently they are Baal, Lord of Destruction, Diablo, Baal. Lord of Terror, Baal, yeah. Lord of Destruction, Diablo, Lord of Terror, and Mephisto, Lord of Hatred.
Yes, those are the three primes. You've learned them now. Once we get all the blessings... once we say all the names and we say dual Mephistos, is that Mephisto? I think so. The wolf opens up another portal with the vision of a Sestron.
Right, because this is the point at which the wolf reveals himself as Mephisto.
Hell yes.
And he what he says basically is because he was defeated and trapped in soul stones and cast back to hell, it's taking a long time for all of his power to kind of reform. So he's trapped in this wolf with the face ripped off.
Yeah, so the wolf is an aspect of him that was kind of, I guess, ripped out of the black soul stone. Was it the black soul stone in Diablo 3 that was shattered? I think so. That had everything in it, and then the prime evils had their kind of all three have kind of an aspect that is somewhere existing in Sanctuary, and we're dealing with the wolf right now. And clearly, Mephisto is up to something. Devious and hateful and wants to conquer everything because all of this is Mephisto's fault. All of this, he is probably definitely the most conniving of the prime evils, and he was done dirty in Diablo 2. So I'm really glad he's back and up to no good. But my God, is he charming.
He is charming.
I fear that I would fall for him so fast.
You fear that he would let you offer you forbidden knowledge?
Yes. Turns out he hates his daughter and wants us to destroy her. Well, that's very Greek of him. We open the way to the temple and descend into the halls of hatred to find a ritual happening.
I'll say this. There's a moment here also where Lorath does not love that we've been probably talking to Mephisto all game and didn't tell him. And my character response is pretty sassy. It's kind of like, we all have secrets, don't we?
Don't we? Haradrim?
But also, like, I don't know. If there's an implication there that, like, my character might actually break a little bad in this game at some point, that could be fun.
Yeah, that's fun. They're kind of toying with it. They're toying with it a lot more than they have in previous entries, and I was thoroughly invested because it wasn't like just the way forward isn't like super clear. We're not just straight up heading east and then going to kill Diablo, right? It's not so obvious. Anyway, Sestron was another example of the Haradrim's really cool plans all blowing up. We approach the ritual, and hopefully we're not too late. We're kind of too late.
So, a cultist cuts his own throat, and the blood joins a lot of other blood floating in the air.
There's like this it's beautiful. Absolutely terrible, like obviously gross, but like there's this cloud of blood droplets hovering over this this woman who is covered in this like quicksilver tattoos all over her body, and she's unconscious mostly, and Elias is sort of melting liquid onto her body into these runes and the cultists are like one by one sacrificing themselves so that their blood goes up into this cloud. And before too much happens,
Lorath
just jumps forward and murks the hell out of Elias. And
yeah,
I was like,
grabs the dagger, stabs him in the neck.
Sweet. And it disrupts the ritual.
Elias
seems dead. He rescues the woman who was apparently going to be a vessel for Andariel. She is named Tysa. And we have to kill the cannibal king who led the prisoner uprising of Gul'ran, and as kind of the ACT boss. And Tysa, this woman, starts hearing a voice in her head. That's not good.
She's got a demon in her head.
She's some sort of conduit or vessel for Andariel. That would suck. That's one of the seven. That's really bad. And Elias is somehow alive. I don't know. He seems to have gotten up and left. People saw him running away. Sure, why not? I don't know. Something's going on there. He's got a safe spot in the eastern deserts of Khejistan. And I was like, yes, we're going back. Woo!
Okay, so this is the point where I was like,
okay, I was a little more excited because Khejistan was in Diablo 3.
I don't have any context for that. What I have context for is, one, finding the place we have to go on the map was a nightmare because you can't access it except from one direction. And so I spent a good amount of time wandering around the rest of the map trying to even figure out how I get into this unmarked region of the map.
So we look for that safe spot in a refuge of bandits in the deserts. Oh yeah, and it was so far. And this is before you have the horse.
Yeah.
Oh, so far. Oh, yeah, this part was stupid. But and I was a necromancer, so I have no mobility either. So I was just like,
So we make it to town, though.
You're a druid. You can turn into a dog or something, right?
and straight up, when we get to this town, and it might as well be fucking Alphino here, just being like, I think we need to ask around for more information. And then like 4 exclamation marks light up over people's heads.
Oh my god, yeah. But once we get there, it's pretty freaking cool. We hear about a guy who's drugged up in a that bandit hole, and it's a character that I'm familiar with, who was in Diablo 2. Minor character.
This is a guy from Diablo 2.
His name's Mischief. Is back.
Was his voice acting also insufferable in Diablo 2?
No, it was actually really cute. It was actually like really charming and like suave. He was I like this guy. Aw, his voice acting. He's like so overeager. And what's funny to me about it is that Mischief has such a minor role in Diablo 2. He's like the ferryman from Act 2 to Act 3.
Oh, really?
And the Mischief in this game is just like, oh, those grand adventures we went on, Deckard. And I was like, you're like my Uber once.
Okay. That context makes this much funnier.
I fucking love this guy. But like, he was like, I don't know. In Diablo 2, there wasn't that much story to go on. You're not like running around doing all this stuff. You kind of like can talk to everyone in town as you're doing certain quests, and they'll like offer one voice line for you. But there's not much to go off of. But Mischief was likable and memorable enough for that. I was like, oh, this guy, you know. There's probably certain other characters from Diablo 2 I'd be like, I don't remember you in Kurast at all. Who the heck?
But you remember this guy.
I remember this guy, and I remember as well, I think there's a side quest here where you can find, either here or maybe in the next act, where you can find a sword that belongs to a mercenary merchant who was a character I remember from Diablo 2. So they're doing a lot more connecting to the previous games in this one than they did in Diablo 3 for sure. That was a really nice pull, I thought. He thinks Lorath is Deckard Cain. He's like super drugged out of his mind. Deckard Cain no longer with us. But Mischief is unaware of that because the internet doesn't exist. So he just assumes that the person who was probably like 20 or so years ago is still alive. He's totally cool with guiding us through the sandstorm, so we agreed to meet at the Foreskin Chapel in the north, at the edge of the sandstorm, where Tysa is recuperating from her little ritual.
Yeah, because like
Andariel.
Where Andariel, because like Andariel's influence is lesser in the chapel, so it's kind of safe in there.
Yeah, it's the Foreskin Chapel.
So we make off on our long trek across the desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tysa ends up staying behind, and hopefully she's fine by the time we get back.
Hopefully.
The storm was mildly annoying and pretty long. Just, ouch, ooh.
The gardens on the other side are very cool, though. It's worth it to get through it.
Yeah. But I was just like, man, we're doing Secret of Evermore again, huh?
Well, and it's like, because also, like, my HP regen is high enough at this point that just, like, it doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, same with Secret of Evermore. It was just, like, a little bit of a fuck you. But it was kind of funny. Yeah, we bake it through Mashif. There's one good moment where Mashif is like, "Oh, my smokes! I didn't get. We have to go back." And we're like, "No, we don't. No, we don't. I will kill you." But we make it to this really cool desert palace at the end of it, and we pretend to be cultists to infiltrate the palace. We tell Mashif to stay put because there's no way he can act.
He could pull this off. No.
And Lilith was apparently here. I hope we didn't just miss her.
We did. Hey, we caught up with Elias at least.
Yeah,
who appears to have the sightless eye, which is basically
that's not good.
It's basically a palantir, right? Or like,
yeah, it's a scrying device. It's a scrying device. It is something that in Diablo 2, an entire sisterhood was meant to guard and keep out of the hands of evil. And of course, Andariel got a hand of it or a hold of it in the monastery, and it was not good for anyone. the sisterhood is also, we learn like through kind of context clues and other hints, much diminished at this point. Not a very strong force, but at one point they were
nobody
feared
appears
and revered.
To be, everyone in this game appears to be diminished. Like this appears to be sanctuary
except for the cathedral.
Except
they're
for the
doing
cathedral,
pretty good.
Some almost suspicious. That
yeah. Weird. Yes. So the. But yeah, not a good MacGuffin for them to have. He wasn't using it on us, though. He says, like, that would be stupid. You're not worth it. Why would I do that?
I mean, frankly, like, with...
he's using it to talk to Lilith.
Well, especially, like, we kill him, like, six times.
Oh, my God,
this
fight, like, this repeated fight is so cool. Repeated, like, it's so cool. But yeah, he keeps coming back to life because he's apparently some sort of lich, which is pretty freaking wild. We don't have Taisa with us at this point. Anyway,
it's not even clear that, like, it's not like it's his body coming back to life. It feels like he just keeps getting new bodies. It feels like
he keeps coming in from off screen being like, haha,
it's me again.
It's me.
It's like he's rematerializing or something.
It's his eye. And it's funny. You mentioned Alfano prior. Because we get a bit more of a speech from him, and I'm starting to realize that his voice is very familiar.
Wait, do you?
I'll give you a guess as to which character Elias played in Final Fantasy XIV. Think about him, and think about the clue I just gave you.
I mean, if it's not Alfano, is it like Urianche?
So close.
Sankrit?
It does sound like him. Same city. However, this is Anthony Howell, the voice actor for Forshino.
Really? Oh, yeah. Cool.
It's so cool.
All right.
He does a spectacular job, too. I've been loving... I mean, Elias, like, the way he's taunting us and just the things he's been saying, I think he's been a super awesome deuteragonist so far. Probably one of the better ones in the franchise. I've been really interested in him, and I guess I like Zoltan Kuhl as well, but yes, it's been and with the voice actor for Loreth being a Cid from Final Fantasy 16, I was like, woo, crossover episode. Cid and Forshino having a little tete-a-tete. But yeah, he's a necromancer just like me. We can't kill him, but we fight through him a few times and nab the sightless eye and escape but we find that Mashif.
Oh,
poor Mashif has been stabbed and mortally wounded. Very sad scene. Sad farewell.
I mean, you know, he seems like he had a good life. Not really, but
he had a terrible life. who on this planet has had a good life? Nobody. Maybe the adventurers are like the Nephilim who are super into this shit. And that is a really great end to Act 3. That's like the first half of the game, and we take ourselves into Act 4 here, which is really, really short.
Yes, which I appreciated.
I appreciated.
And then,
I'll tell
like,
you
Act
right now,
5 is long and Act 6 is short?
Oh, you think Act 6 is short? Oh, no. Acts 5 and 6 are extremely long.
Okay. I'll be going to get started playing this weekend.
Yeah. Man, as I said, we're going to record two episodes at once.
I got a lot of video games to play.
You do have a lot of video games to play, and we have to... We're going to have to book a lot of time. I don't know. It's going to have to be a weekend record or something.
We'll figure it out.
Holy. At the start of Act 4, yes, we deduce that Elias used the sightless eye to contact Lilith, likely, which is why he needed it. She was already in hell with her key and her passage. Why? What could she be doing? And so, we're like, well, we t- talked to Mephisto and he said he was weak, so...
So we try using the eye ourselves.
We see Lilith in hell and she can feel Mephisto's essence reforming. And then I was like, Alex is going to love this because what happens here?
Yeah, she sees us watching her, which is one of my favorite things. I love it when this shit happens. I love it when
directly in the camera and I was like, that was a bad idea.
I love it when you're psychically perceiving someone and then they become aware of your extrasensory perception. They look back at you.
Yeah. And Lorth is like, ah, fuck. So he very dramatically writes a note to Donan while fearing Lilith's power, were she to take Mephisto's essence, basically, because she has the soul stone, right? Because right. And then because Astaroth got. Wait, does she have the soul stone?
No. We're going to go get a soul stone.
Yes, that's right. We're going
to
get the soul stone.
But she is just
back.
Like trying to intercept Mephisto's like reforming essence and like take it for herself, right?
Yeah, she got the soul stone basically too, and gave it to Astaroth and then left. Mm-hmm. All right, okay. But whatever. She's strong enough to take Mephisto's essence without it. We head to the cathedral. We go check on Donan and catch in Inari. Oh yeah, because he's up in Kyovashad. I know the name of the town now.
And he takes us to the Herodric Vault.
Well, we catch Inarius giving a really cool speech, where he believes that it's his spear that will pierce hatred and ascend to heaven. And recite the prophecy pretty much word for word. And I'm like, wow, that prophecy sure is really specific and couldn't possibly be misinterpreted in any way. It's like a spear will pierce hatred, and then somebody who's chained up is gonna not be chained up anymore. And Inarius is like, surely that will be my spear piercing somebody that's literally hatred, and then I am the one that is metaphorically
I love egomaniac dickhead angels.
It's incredible. Yes, there's plenty of them in this franchise. Diablo 3, what the hell is the other one? Imperius is in Diablo 3, and Malthael is just driven psychotic because of the events of Diablo 2. It's worth revisiting those. Yes, the angels are something else. We give Donan the plan, and he just blurts it out loud in the cathedral. Stop that. Okay, nobody seems to be listening, but stop. Well, he bids us go to the Herodric Vault, and he's like, oh, Lorth didn't give you a horse, didn't he? Well, you can have one of mine. I was like, cool, that would have been great 2 acts ago.
Thank you so much.
But, oh my god, we finally have a horse, and exploring in the world is no longer a chore. Big criticism of this game, the horse comes way too late. Way too late, especially after that long trek across the desert. That sucked. But I guess they wanted us to do the desert.
Before we get the horse, sure.
They wanted us to do the guide stuff with Mashif, yeah. Anyway.
We go to the vault. We find Nerell again. She's there on her own. We get to go through the other door this time. This is cool.
I like the moment where Nerell meets Donan and they two kind of butt heads. Because Nerell is rightfully skeptical of the Herodrim for being sort of their weird neoliberal selves.
Understandably so.
Yeah, but Donan's like, he has some sassy retorts of his own vis-a-vis her age, inexperience, naivety, and also her gumption for coming in here and coming into his old home and wrecking up the place.
Well, and also, there's an interesting moment here where we get the Soul Stone, and then Donan says, okay, but I can't tune the Soul Stone. I can't make it work because you need faith for that, and I don't have any faith anymore.
This sucks.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But it sucks for him, but it's like, that's very interesting. Need faith to summon primals or create Soul Stones, whatever. Nerell tags along. Back to the Foreskin Chapel.
Tyst runs out on her own into the sandstorm where Elias is again.
Yeah. So we make it. There's a nasty sandstorm.
Turns out she was kind of a homing device. She kind of led him right to us.
No, it's not her. It was the Sightless Eye.
Oh, the Sightless Eye. Yeah, oh, okay. They were like, that down.
She was like, okay, I can see where you are now. Thank you. So Elias came back. And then, yes, Tyst runs out into the sandstorm because she's suffocating under the thoughts of Andariel or something. I don't know. And then the ritual gets completed. And out from the ground summons, a familiar face with just anti-gravity red hair, chained up from the events of Diablo 2, and Andariel herself. Here we go. Yes, exciting. Big boss fight. Aw, man, she's dead.
mean, these bosses don't even have phases, man. I keep waiting to be like, haha, I beat your first health bar, but you're transforming and there's a bigger one. Yeah, but no.
It's a little sad. It's not, this game is not Elden Ring when it comes to boss difficulty on your first playthrough. The resummon ones are a bit harder, quite a bit harder, but we're not there yet. You don't get to experience emotional catharsis as a result of your long journey. Another criticism, I think that's fair, of this game.
Yeah, anyway, we beat her, and the last thing that really happens in this section is that Tysa is like, you know, I probably should mention, I might know a guy who knows how Elias is doing his whole immortality deal.
Cool. Yeah, you probably should have investigated that before running off into the ruins by yourself. But maybe there's a reason she didn't go and talk to whomever that may be. We are going to then head off next episode into the swamps of Hawazar and finish off Diablo 4's main campaign. That's going to be a heck of an episode. It probably would be two episodes into one. We're going to try and keep it under 2 hours. We'll see.
We're going to do our best.
But that's the summation of Acts 3 and 4 of Diablo 4. I felt that this part was probably the weakest in the story. The pacing issues with the long walks and the straight and just not having the mount and being able to get from point A to point B to get the story issues moving along, was a challenging point for me to get through. Things,
you think stuff picks up with Act 5?
Yes. And I think there was really good moments. I still like Elias. I liked that chase sequence a lot. That was very cool. I liked seeing Mashif and having that moment with him. But everything in between was pretty rough in this part of the game. But things get a lot more dense in Acts 5 and 6, which is, I think, a really, really good thing. And I'm looking forward to talking with you about it. Alongside our next game, Devil Daggers, which you said before is a very addicting, another kind of action RPG sort of thing.
Not action RPG. Okay. It's a score attack game. I picked it deliberately because I figure it's going to be a pretty quick discussion, but we'll have fun playing it. It is very stripped down.
It is an
arena score attack game.
We're going to need it because we're going to need as much time as we can to talk about the main story of Diablo 4. But that's going to do it for this episode of Storm Bones. Slightly less bones and more flesh in these last two acts.
Yeah. I mean, the bones are in the flesh.
There are bones in the flesh, and they do come out of the flesh. And of course, I was still a necromancer at this point. I did reroll into Spiritborn for the expansion. I'm excited to talk about it because I want to talk about it for that final episode of the month, which will be, of course, just a full episode on the expansion and our final thoughts on Diablo 4, things like that. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to reach out to us, we have, of course, email and Discord are the best ways to do that. Both of those links are in the link pop in the description of the episode. Really appreciate you guys tuning in, rating the episode, sharing it with your friends. I've yet to make that. Never mind, not going to say it. And this has been our second week of Storm Bones, and we hope your season is as spooky and as delightful as it has been for us. And until next episode, born for. Nope, that's way old. Nope. I've been your bone of light. That's still funny. I don't know why. Jerome Barbones. Why do I got it. I'm delirious.
I've been bone of light. Alexander Hambonk.
Perfect. And that's it.
Good evening.
Normally I say that part. Oh no, what do I do?
Night.